Sunday again. Good morning to you, Ben.
Good morning.
Yeah. How was your weekend?
Quiet.
Yep. It was a quiet one for me as well, which was a great reprieve after the very busy week that we had.
Yeah, it sure was. I don't even know where to start.
I know. I showed up on Wednesday, so I wasn't even there for Monday and Tuesday, and I still feel like we did 2 weeks.
Yeah, I honestly had kind of forgotten about that. Really, yeah. These last few days have been quite wild, heading into the budget day that wasn't, due to fisheries protests at Confederation Building. Budget day ultimately ended up happening Thursday afternoon in a very weird and strange and unusual way for a budget to be rolled out. And then we tried to cover it all off on Friday. It was a strange week, but a good one.
It was, yes. And of course, there were other things in the news as well. We're going to be talking about some Parkinson's research. We've got some technology conversations to have with you. Lots of other things. Oh, Iceberg Alley announced their lineup for June, so we'll be talking about a lot of different things, but the dominant topic was the budget and the protests around it.
So let's get right into it. Grab yourself a cup of coffee.
Maybe a cup of tea.
Piece of toast.
Or a biscuit.
And join us right here on the best of your VOCM mornings. Good Sunday morning and welcome to the best of your VOCM mornings. I'm Ben Murphy.
And I'm Jerry Lynn Mackey. Well, Parkinson's disease has been identified as the fastest growing neurological disorder in the world. More than 100,000 Canadians now live with the disease, including about 1,500 across Newfoundland and Labrador. Some experts are warning that we may see a major increase in Parkinson's disease in the coming years. Dr. Kina Squarey is a neurologist in private practice in St. John's. She joined us on the show on Monday.
So why are the numbers for this disease significantly increasing?
Well, there's probably a number of factors playing a role, but the major risk factor is that we're all getting older. So the biggest risk factor for developing Parkinson's disease is advancing age.
And what exactly, for those who may not know, what exactly is Parkinson's disease?
So Parkinson's is a progressive neurological disease, and it results in part from the death of a group of cells in the brain that produce a chemical called dopamine. And so a few of the common symptoms that a person might experience would be shaking or tremor of one of your limbs, like your hand or your foot, muscle stiffness, or what we call rigidity, slowness of movement, and impaired balance. But there are many, many other symptoms that a person with Parkinson's can have.
What are the early signs?
The early signs can be loss of sense of smell, or anosmia, as we call it. Depression, constipation, and REM sleep behavioral disorder. So that's where you kind of, you know, when you go to sleep at night and we can't act out our dreams because our body loses all tone. So in this condition, you can act out your dreams. So you might hit your bed partner or knock a lamp off the table or something like that, scream out. They're usually bad dreams.
Who is most likely to get the disease?
Who is most likely to get the disease? That's a very good question. We really don't know. As I said, there's another number of risk factors for the disease. There are genetic forms, but there are also environmental risk factors. Aside from just getting older, you know, there are lifestyle choices. So we're, you know, people are more sedentary, what our food choices are. And for some reason, there's an inverse relationship between smoking and Parkinson's disease. So people that don't smoke are at higher risk for the disease.
We're speaking with Dr. Kina Squarey, a neurologist in private practice here in the province. And Dr. Squarey, how will Newfoundland and Labrador cope with an escalating disease versus a lack of local neurologists?
Well, Ben, I could spend an hour talking to you about that topic alone. Currently in the province, I'm the only movement sort of specialist, and unfortunately, I'm no longer with Newfoundland and Labrador Health Services. But that's a whole other story. In reality, people are going to have to rely on, in addition to the few neurologists that we have, other specialists like those that practice in geriatric medicine, internal medicine, as well as their primary care physicians. I'm also involved with a private clinic here at Proactive, and we're currently in the process of developing a multidisciplinary team to help people living in the province with Parkinson's.
What are off periods and why are they so debilitating when you have Parkinson's?
So when people progress with Parkinson's, they can experience fluctuations in their symptoms. So they can go from being what we call on and all of their symptoms are controlled to being off where their symptoms worsen and reappear. So to give you an example, this might mean that a person with Parkinson's can be out going for a walk on a Sunday afternoon and suddenly they become unable to continue walking. Or they may experience what we call freezing of gait, and that's where they feel like their feet are actually stuck to the floor and they have trouble initiating their gait, so they're essentially frozen.
What are some new advances in research efforts that are helping this community in Newfoundland and Labrador live better?
So there's always research ongoing, Ben, but we don't know the cause of the disease or how it progresses and much less about how to stop it. We currently have three therapies for advanced Parkinson's, and one of those just became available this year, and it's called VioLev, or Fos-Levodopa, Fos-Carbidopa. And it's basically for people with Parkinson's whose motor symptoms are no longer able to be controlled well with their oral medications. So it's basically a pump, and people connect a small needle just under their skin, and the solution kind of diffuses or infuses on 24 hours a day.
Dr. Squeri, where can people go for more information about Parkinson's disease?
So I would direct them to visit Parkinson Canada at parkinson.ca or the Parkinson Society Newfoundland and Labrador at nlparkinson.ca.
And that is Dr. Kana Squeri. She's a neurologist in private practice here in St. John's. Over to you, Ben.
And let's go to Tech Talk Tuesday. We'll start by exploring the U.S. Congress's recent passage of a bill that could result in a nationwide ban of TikTok. Then we'll examine the potential implications for Canada if such a ban occurs in the U.S. Lastly, we'll discuss the recent controversy surrounding an image of the royal family and the mainstreaming of digital photo manipulation. Joining us for Tech Talk Tuesday, our local tech expert, Kevin Andrews.
If the bill does become law, Kevin, it would force the parent company ByteDance to sell its stake in TikTok within 6 months, or the app could be banned in the U.S. So what is the significance of this bill passed by the U.S. House of Representatives regarding TikTok, and what are some of the concerns surrounding the app's ownership?
Well, I mean, one of the primary concerns surrounding TikTok's ownership of the possibility it would be data sharing with the Chinese government. And so as we now know, Chinese companies are subject to a national security law that requires them to share data with the government upon the request. And this has raised fears that TikTok, which has over 150 million users just in the U.S., could sort of be compelled to share their user data with the Chinese government. And as a result, then that would pose a potential threat to national security. Now, to their defense, I mean, TikTok has sought to address these concerns by implementing measures to ensure that the data of its U.S. users is kept separate from ByteDance's operations in China. However, reports have indicated that there are still vulnerabilities in TikTok's data protection measures. And with instances, they're saying that data has been shared between TikTok in the U.S. and ByteDance in China. And so as a result, this bill passed easily in the House of Representatives, showing that both major political parties want to address concerns about TikTok. And it also shows, I think, the growing tension between both the U.S. and China. So, if this bill is approved by the Senate and signed into law by the president, which seems increasingly likely, it could have significant implications for TikTok operations in the U.S. And then, I think, potentially affecting its presence here in Canada as well.
Yeah, and that's exactly where I wanted to go next, was what could happen here in Canada if the U.S. banned TikTok, and what might influence Canada's decision about the app?
Well, good question. I mean, if the U.S. decides to ban TikTok over national security concerns, one might assume Canada would consider taking similar action. Now, this decision could be influenced by Canada's tendency to sometimes align its digital policy with that of the U.S., especially on important issues like digital security. And while TikTok has consistently denied accusations of sharing user data with the Chinese government, the app's Chinese ownership has really raised flags in both the U.S. and here here in Canada. For instance, just last September, Canada began really a nationwide security review of TikTok. And you know, it's only recently that specific details of this review have been made to the public. And as a direct result of these, you know, past investigations, it looks like the government, the Canadian government, has really implemented a new policy regarding what they're calling foreign investment in digital media to really prevent misuse by what they're calling hostile actors. And so this policy led to a review following TikTok business expansion back, I think, in June of 2023. And it involved what they're saying is sort of the marketing and content development activities related to TikTok, really related to the TikTok app here in Canada. Now, I think, you know, with all that in mind, many people in the know believe that banning TikTok might be more of a symbolic gesture than really a practical one in terms of preventing, you know, total Chinese surveillance. I mean, tech experts often say to me that, you know, banning just this app or just one company may not significantly stop China's broader efforts, you know, in this area. So I think despite all these efforts, if the U.S. moves to ban TikTok, Canada may feel compelled to follow just to really maintain alignment on that digital policy.
We're speaking with our local tech expert, Kevin Andrews, on Tech Talk Tuesday here on your VOCM Mornings. And Kevin, this next one really took social media and the world really by storm.
Yeah,
the recent controversy surrounding an image of Princess Kate and her children has brought to light the ease with which digital photo manipulation can alter our perception of reality. So in a world now where editing tools are so readily available and accessible, the authenticity of visual media has come into question. So Kevin, can you just discuss a bit further how this controversy showed how digital photo editing and affects how believable visual media really is?
Yeah, I mean, you know, so it looks as if the Princess Kate photo has really ignited, I think, a broader discussion about the credibility of visual media in this digital age now. And so this incident shows really how easily digital editing can, you know, change images, making people, you know, question if the visual content can really be trusted. I mean, you know, editing tools are now so commonplace, and really anybody can modify any photo with just a few taps of their phone. And so, you know, this trend affects, I think, how we really see and understand images now, especially online. And really, in a world where we usually believe what we see, being able to change images, I think, challenges the idea that photos show the truth. And it's now hard to really, you know, tell images from real images, I think, from edited ones, and which really makes people more skeptical and really less trusting of any visual media. And so, you know, the situation with Princess Kate, I think, shows the difficulty news organizations and really photojournalists have in checking if images are real. I mean, with lots of fake news online, it's really crucial for visual media, I think, to be really trustworthy. So news organizations really tend to follow strict rules to ensure their images are real. But, you know, it's getting harder to spot changes because of these easy-to-use digital manipulation tools. And so, you know, to really complicate these matters, we really haven't even talked about AI yet, because, you know, AI's increasing role in digital manipulation can make it even more harder to tell if these images are real. And AI tools really now can change images in ways that we couldn't before, making it even harder to know than what's real and what's fake. And, I think as AI gets even better, it's even more important for us to be really careful and thoughtful when we look at an image, or really now even a video. So really the bottom line here, I think, is, you know, as the technology gets better and as AI develops, we really need to be more cautious and skeptical of what we look at online.
Yeah, it feels like this problem may get a bit bigger before it starts to get a bit better.
Yeah, I think this is maybe the tip of the iceberg.
And that is our local tech expert, Kevin Andrews, joining us for Tech Talk Tuesday. Back to you, Jerry Lynn.
Well, the first day of spring, ha ha ha, it always gets a laugh, doesn't it, here in Newfoundland and Labrador? Yes, some days, and I'm looking at the West Coast when I say this morning, makes you want to wish you were waking up to sun and surf instead of wind and snow, with sandals on your feet and not your winter boots. Well, many people in the province have booked a vacation package and are counting down the days. Julia Kent is Director of Social Responsibility and Advocacy with CAA Atlantic. She joined us earlier this week.
How's business for vacation packages down south? One would think probably pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I mean, I've said before, travel is back. It's back, you know, well over pre-COVID levels, which we're really happy about. We're really optimistic about, you know, things feeling normal again is really great, and people want to travel. I will say, it does seem the weather that we have in the winter does seem to affect, you know, how often people are booking vacations. So, for example, we had a relatively mild January in Atlantic Canada, and our sales were, you know, a kind of medium for bookings. But February was a lot of snow in February, and our vacation bookings were through the roof. So if that's any indication, people are definitely thinking about sun destinations more when the weather is bad in Atlantic Canada in winter.
How big a role do direct flights from your own city play?
Oh, goodness. So there is a little bit of a difference between nonstop and direct, and a lot of people get those confused.
Thank you.
So nonstop, you know, means you're going straight to your destination, no stops whatsoever, one flight. You know, direct means you're going directly to your destination. So there's sometimes there's a little bit of confusion there, particularly when you're talking to people in the travel industry. However, a direct nonstop flight, huge, especially for Atlantic Canadians. We're in a regional, you know, corridor here. Newfoundland and Labrador and the rest of Atlantic Canada often have to go through places like Halifax, Montreal, Toronto to get anywhere. So if they have the option to take one flight, no stops, to get to their destination, they're going to book that over anything else for sure.
What are some of the popular destinations?
Right now, we're seeing basically anywhere hot. So Florida and south, those would be the most popular. You know, we hear a lot of people going to Dominican or something like that, but really, there's not one that stands out. Anywhere hot, you know, particularly places with a resort are popular. This year, I will say we are seeing a ton of cruise bookings. The reason for that is, you know, there was some concern about cruising with COVID, and that seems to have gone away. So people are booking in droves. The great thing about cruising is you get on the ship and all your food is done for you. You get to go to a new destination every day. The entertainment is top notch. So they're really attractive and increasing in popularity for sure.
Any concerns about Dominican Republic given the unrest in Haiti?
I mean, the short answer would be no. You know, I certainly wouldn't be going to Haiti at this time. And we follow the government advisories for which countries are not recommended to travel to. But the unrest is happening in Haiti. It's not happening in the Dominican Republic right now. So I would probably, you know, keep a watch on the government advisories. But for now, no, I would see no concern in going to Dominican Republic. That could change at any given point, as we saw with COVID. So just staying on top of those federal government websites and getting the alerts is a good idea. And if you're working with a travel advisor, they'll keep you abreast of that anyway.
Are last-minute deals often best?
Well, this is a tough one because, you know, yes, you can get a great deal last minute sometimes. However, your selection is so limited. And for people that are taking a vacation that might be a really big investment and a one-time thing for them, that you want to have the flexibility and the options of everything that you would like. So when you're booking last minute, you have way less selection. You can be way less picky. You have to be really flexible and totally comfortable going with something that you maybe otherwise wouldn't have chosen. So I kind of caveat last minute deals with a little asterisk, like, yes, you might be able to get a good deal, but you'll have a lot less options.
We're speaking with Julia Kent, Director, Social Responsibility and Advocacy with CAA Atlantic. And Julia, should we be concerned about whether that voucher will still be, you know, valid in the airline around when you want to use a voucher when it comes to, you know, maybe canceling a flight or getting money back, that kind of thing?
Well, you know, a lot of these concerns that people have nowadays, particularly concerning cancellations and vouchers and future travel credits and whether or not the airline will honor them, are really centered around what happened in 2020 with COVID. And we saw a lot of that. We saw some unprecedented actions by airlines, which it's hard to forget all of that. But long story short, you know, that kind of thing was a COVID thing specifically. So if you, as the traveler, are canceling, you might get the ability to rebook at a charge. But these vouchers, you know, they can exist given your, like, depending on your situation. But for the most part, if you're canceling, you're going to be at penalty. If the airline is canceling, absolutely, they're going to cover their end of the deal. One thing I will say in this whole conversation about cancellations, changes, vouchers, buy travel insurance. And a lot of people think their credit card is going to cover them. And in some cases, that is true. You have to look into the very nitty-gritty specifics of your card. But in the vast majority of cases, it's not adequate. Travel insurance is so important for so many reasons. And we saw this during the pandemic. Like, you have to protect your investments. And having that peace of mind that if anything happens with your health or with the airline or anything at all, baggage, you name it, that you're going to be covered and your investment is protected is so invaluable. So I highly recommend that. And if you have travel insurance, you bypass all the issues people are worried about in terms of cancellations and vouchers and all of that.
And that is Julia Kent. She's with CAA. We were talking about those vacations down south and all the logistics around it. Well, we've got lots more to bring you. We're going to be talking about Budget Day and the protests that surrounded it. Stay with us on the best of your VOCM mornings. Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to the best of your VOCM mornings. I'm Jerry Lynn Mackey.
And I'm Ben Murphy, and we're going to take you right to the top story of the week. Protesting fish harvesters shut down Confederation Building and Budget Day planned for Wednesday. Well over 1,000 harvesters gathered at all entrances of the facility, blocking government officials and employees from getting inside until they achieve their main goal of free enterprise. After several hours, protest organizer John Effort and FFAW Secretary Treasurer Jason Spingle address the crowd.
We got numbers, and I've been saying all along, numbers is what means something. It's what's going to show that not only do we mean business, that it means something to us. It's part of everybody that's here. We're here for one reason. We're here to be treated fairly. We're here looking for, what are we looking for? What are we looking for? What are we going to get? And when are we going to stop? So you're all here and you're all listening. Seems like that there's a few words coming here and there, that there's dissension in the ranks, that the fishermen are here, SEPET or FFAW. Far as I know, and to my understanding, the fishermen are the FFAW. This doesn't look like a splintered group to me. I don't see two groups, I see one group. We're all FFAW, we're all fishermen. And we're not here for anything else but to get treated fairly. And you get the rights that every other Canadian should have, and that's free enterprise.
The splinter group is the Liberal government.
But anyway, we done something. I was told this morning, or I wouldn't say we done something, but something happened today that have never happened before in the history of Newfoundland. The budget was cancelled.
Yeah.
And I got a funny feeling that it may be canceled again tomorrow.
Yeah.
The next business day.
Yeah.
And the next business day until we get what? Until we get what?
Free enterprise.
Pretty clear message, isn't it? So there's only one way now to move forward, is that we need to some communication from our government. Sit down. We'll talk about it. If you want to do it right now, we'll do it right now. And you'll have your budget tomorrow, and you'll be able to go to work tomorrow. And I apologize for anybody who missed a day's work. Enjoy your holiday. But anyway, we're going to stay around here for another little while, just to show what's going to happen and what's going to be here tomorrow. And like I said, look, numbers is what's doing it. Numbers is what makes the difference. The people's faces, the families' faces, is what they got to see to get change. And I think we showed them today, and we're going to show them again tomorrow if we have to, with more faces, more people, more stories.
First of all, I'd like to, we had a very, very serious and unfortunate event that was unnecessary. It involved, you know, our police force, and we appreciate their working people like all of you folks there. And it was unfortunate that someone took too much of a situation there, and we have an injured member and an injured police officer as well. But his name, I think I was just speaking with his brother, his name is Richard Martin. I got a report that he it looks like his hip is broken. His family's with him. I don't have official report. I want to pass on to, I will pass on, and let's give him a round of applause that everyone here hopes for a speedy recovery for Richard, and we're with him. So, John, I really appreciate getting to work with you more closely in the past couple of weeks. And I know John's a modest man. He is. And what I want to say is he's shown the leadership and the commitment and the advocacy. I've seen, I've seen the strain on this man's face and the worry about all of his, you know, fellow fish harvesters and plant workers and everyone else about the decisions that, you know, or the actions were taken here. And I said, John, you didn't start this. This was started by the company Fish Buyers that's looking for unlimited control and is out of control. And it started, you know, and it's carried on by a government that's not wanting to achieve fairness here. So John Effort, first and foremost, deserves a round of applause for all the work he's done to bring this. And this is what unionism is about. It's about us collectively, and it's about people stepping up. And so let's give John Effort Jr. a big round of applause.
And that is just some of the audio that we've gathered from John Effort and FFAW Secretary Treasurer Jason Spingle from the protesting that went on this past week at Confederation Building. Well, Justice Minister John Hogan says safety was the primary reason why a court injunction was sought after reported injuries as a result of the protests outside Confederation Building occurred.
First and foremost is everyone's safety. Certainly, I'm on the understanding, having talked to people who work in the public service this morning, that they didn't feel safe. Obviously, you've all seen the videos, and some of you were there this morning, that they didn't feel safe going to work. The Department of Justice took the step this morning to go to court to ask for an injunction. That injunction was granted, I think, maybe less than an hour ago. I think some of you have probably seen the copy of the order from Justice Stack. That injunction will prohibit individuals from blocking safe access to Confederation Building starting right now. So any individuals that are there that will be subject to that injunction will serve with that. So they'll have notice that, as the Premier said, they're free to protest, they're free to express their voice, their opinions, their views, but they're not free to prevent individuals, whether it's public service workers, workers at the House of Assembly, or politicians who will deliver the budget as soon as it's safe to do so, from entering that premises. Of course, the Royal Newfoundland Constabulary are aware of the injunction, and they will take steps, I'm sure, to make sure that the court order is enforced and that people are able to proceed safely to work and that the government is able to proceed diligently with the budget that, as the Premier outlined, contains numerous budgetary items, which is very important to every Newfoundlander and Labradorian.
And that is Justice Minister John Hogan. Meanwhile, Premier Andrew Furey admits there are no easy solutions when it comes to corporate concentration in the fishery. He's committed to a review of the process with the assistance of the FFAW, but that likely won't satisfy harvesters who say the time for change is past due. Here's some of what he had to say to reporters, including VOCM's Linda Swain.
Obviously, there was a disruption in the proceedings of the House of Assembly today, and let me start by saying I understand that there was an injury that occurred with a police officer, and my thoughts and prayers are with him and his family, and wish him a speedy recovery. I also understand that several public officials felt threatened and intimidated today, and let me say first and foremost that that's unacceptable, and my thoughts are with them as well. I am profoundly disappointed today that the behavior of a few could take over and jeopardize a budget that is for the entire province. While I know and appreciate fully that anxieties and emotions run high in the fishery this time of year, and how important the fishery is to Newfoundland and Labrador, and that there are so many hardworking women and men in that industry that we want to be here to support and to continue to work with. And they have entirely the democratic right to peaceful protest. And that is something that we encourage, and as leaders we should all encourage in the democratic process. What is unacceptable is violent protests. And so some of the behaviors we saw today will not be tolerated by me or our government. We have a budget to deliver, one that is important for 530,000 Newfoundlanders and Labradorians, one that delivers on promises of health care, infrastructure, education, roads, fishery, and much, much more. Community groups waiting to hear if they have their funding available. So we intend to go ahead with this budget. It will be implemented.
And that is Premier Andrew Furey. Well, despite the uncertainty around whether the 2024 budget would have been delivered on Thursday, the government did get it out there, but it did look a little different this time around. Finance Minister Siobhan Coady spoke with reporters, many of whom were at an off-site location virtually, to discuss budget details. VOCM's Richard Duggan and Allison King have the coverage.
Certainly, we're very near balance, right? 152 million, which is about 1.5% of revenue. So very near balance. And the reason why is we wanted to continue with the affordability measures. As you know, inflation is now starting to come under control. As you know, yesterday the inflation numbers came out from February of last year, February of this year. Newfoundland and Labrador is about 2%. But we still have high interest rates. And they will start to come down, you know, I guess the governor of the Bank of Canada will let us know, but later this year. In seeing those pressures that people are under, we wanted to keep those cost of living measures that we've put in place. As you know, we've invested well over $500 million in those measures. And so while we're still in a period of high interest rates, while people are still feeling the pressure, we wanted to maintain those. So again, that's the 8-cent reduction in the provincial taxation on gasoline. That is the 50% reduction in the price of registering your vehicle. That is the 15% reduction that we put in place and removing the tax on home insurance. Those are the types of measures, and we wanted to continue them, especially during this difficult time.
Can you comment on the unique nature of delivering this budget?
Well, I can say that this is my fifth budget, so I can say I've had a number of interesting budgets. I've had a couple under COVID too, so. I can say that, yes, it's a little different in the delivery this year. I know that, you know, we'll be in the House of Assembly, which is a good thing. We are able through technology, and I in some ways COVID helped us through this technology to be able to present that, so that, yes, it's a little different of a budget, but I will say that all the work on this budget, all the consultations, all the working with the departments, with the agencies, board, all of that was done in preparation for today. It's very important to the people of the province that they have a strong budget, and we're making incredibly important investments on behalf of the people. So having this budget today, I think, is very responsible.
Minister Coady, with the expected return to surplus in the next couple of years, do we expect to see any movement now with the proposed balanced budget legislation that government was going to bring in?
That's a very great question. Thank you. Because I think I've said to you before, we do have balanced budget legislation that's before the legislature, so we're already moving into second reading on that. I will say that I wanted to really make sure that people understood. I wanted people to understand that we can make these important investments on behalf of the people of Newfoundland and Labrador and still be financially responsible. So now that I've kind of bearing that out for people, yes, I'm sure that we'll be moving forward on that legislation. I can't tell you when. It is before the legislature. I don't know when it will be called from the order paper. But, you know, I think it's very important that, you know, people are nervous about balanced budget legislation, and I'm not. I honestly am not. Look at the investments that we've made in healthcare alone. I mean, when we started, I think in 2020, my first budget speech, we're about well over $1 billion now in additional spending in healthcare alone. And that at the same time, we've been able to introduce some new tax credits, introduce some lowering of some taxes, like the 15% that we've lowered on home insurance, slight change that we've made now in small business. So at the same time, you can be fiscally responsible at the same time as balancing your budget. So I think I've proved that, and that's a good thing. So I hope that people will be very supportive of us when we move forward with balanced budget legislation.
And that is Finance Minister Siobhan Cody speaking with reporters. Ben.
Labor leaders gathered on Thursday to watch Finance Minister Siobhan Cody deliver budget 2024. They did not go to the House of Assembly in solidarity with the hundreds of fisheries protesters outside Confederation Building. Jessica McCormick, president of the Newfoundland and Labrador Federation of Labor, joined us in the VOCM studios on Friday morning.
Your reaction to the protests and the delay?
Yeah, well, it's been a pretty wild couple of days. And, you know, the labor leaders from around the province, particularly those of us who would normally be participating in the budget proceedings, going into the lock-in and getting the briefings, we had a number of conversations over the past couple of days talking about how to approach the situation. And I think it was very clear very early on that we didn't want to cross through the demonstration that fish harvesters were holding outside Confederation Building. I think it's clear that there are, you know, immense frustrations in the fishery. And I know that people say every year, you know, there's a protest just, you know, before the crab fishing season. And I think that that's kind of dismissive, because this is about the livelihood of people in rural Newfoundland and Labrador. It's about, you know, what our economy is built on in rural Newfoundland and Labrador, which is the fishery. And there are a great number of people who are really struggling to get by right now. And the union, and I worked at the union for a number of years, I know from the harvesters and plant workers that I spoke to, that the control that, you know, a small number of corporations have over that industry and the corporate concentration in the fishery is a massive problem, and it's just grown, particularly since the pandemic. So we wanted to be supportive of the people who were, you know, exercising their right to protest outside the Confederation Building. And we wanted to send a message to government that, you know, the labor movement stands in solidarity, that we, you know, want to support other workers, and we wouldn't be participating. And then, of course, you know, all of the stakeholder lock-ins were canceled yesterday anyway. So there was no opportunity, even if we had wanted to go into Confederation Building and get those important briefings.
I'd also like to ask about calling the protest line a picket line. Was that strategic? Or, because, I mean, I guess it's not really a picket line, but you do stand with the laborers.
Exactly. I mean, certainly if workers who worked inside that building were holding a demonstration, it would be closer to a picket line, particularly if they're on strike. But this was a protest and a demonstration. And, you know, I think that trying to respect what those folks were doing there, and also prioritizing the health and safety of the workers, some of whom were showing up to work on that first day of the demonstration. And so, you know, we want to make sure that everybody is safe at the end of the day as well. So it's not a picket line, you know, that is certainly not a legal picket line or meet all the definitions of a picket line. But when it comes to just supporting each other in the labor movement, we want it to be there for them. And I know that crossing into that building to participate in some of those events wouldn't have sent a very good message to those workers. So we wanted to let them know that we support them.
Now, let's talk about the budget. What's your reaction to the document that was delivered yesterday?
Well, I certainly feel like I'm in a bit of that segment of your listeners who said they don't have enough information yet. And I feel like a lot of people don't have enough information. So we gathered with union leaders at our offices yesterday to watch the budget as it was read out by the Minister of Finance. There are a few things that kind of jumped out to me. And maybe I'll start with something that I think is good news. We need to dig into more of the details, but the announcement of a council, I think that it's called Jobs of the Future Council, but essentially a group that brings together labor unions, industry, government, post-secondary institutions to talk about what our labor market is going to look like in a more sustainable jobs in terms of a green economy. That's something that the Federation of Labor had recommended in pre-budget consultations. We wanted something pulled together they're consistent with what the federal government is doing with the Sustainable Jobs Council. So that seems like good news. We obviously don't have a ton of detail on it yet about what that work will look like of the council. But I think when we're thinking about addressing climate change and thinking about renewable energy development in Newfoundland and Labrador, having all of these stakeholders around the table, and in particular having workers at the table so they can have a say and have a voice in what the jobs of the future look like, is critically important. So that looks like good news for workers, something that we're pleased to see. In terms of other, you know, things that we were looking for in the budget, we had been talking quite a bit, pushing really hard on the need for pensions and benefits for early childhood educators. I know we've talked about that, Jaylen, in the past. And so we were, you know, making recommendations in the pre-budget process, and we're disappointed to see that there was no funding to address some of the needs of early childhood educators in the province. We know that addressing the childcare capacity issues requires more ECEs. It requires recruitment and retention, and what we've heard loud and clear from ECEs is that they need pensions and benefits, retirement security, better working conditions to be able to stay in the industry. Some other kind of pieces that we were looking for, I will say that, you know, it's always good news if there are no layoffs, major cuts, rollbacks. That's, you know, usually the first thing that union leaders are looking for in a budget. Of course, this looks like it's a pre-election budget, so we weren't expecting anything too major on that side of things. But the last, you know, point that kind of jumped out to me is around affordability. And this is demonstrated by the folks who are outside the Confederation building who are struggling under the cost of living and their businesses are struggling, but also working people across the province. You know, it's very difficult to make ends meet. And so we were looking for more substantial measures to address affordability.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to the best of your VOCM mornings. I'm Jerry Lynn Mackey.
I'm Ben Murphy. Let's go back to the budget. Opposition leader Tony Wakeham says he's disappointed with what he's heard so far in the budget. He speaks with VOCM's Linda Swain.
The first part of the budget, listening to the highlights of the budget, you know, when they talk about there's no fee increases, no tax increases. Well, unfortunately, right now, Linda, a significant number of people in Newfoundland and Labrador are hurting. As it is. So the fact that you're not freezing or not increasing any taxes is not really going to help people who are already hurting. I would have liked to see taxes like the sugar tax eliminated. The premier turns around and talks about his opposition to the carbon tax increase, which we know is coming April 1st. But at the same time, he has the ability and the power to turn around and eliminate his own sugar tax, and he hasn't done so. The other thing I would think to point out, you know, I've heard that they're moving the Housing Corp in under government. And I would simply say, how does that help put roofs over people's heads? This government has a tendency to do that. We saw it in the education system. Now we're seeing it with our housing. So this doesn't help people. The same as building new infrastructure. It sounds great, but at the end of the day, what we need to be doing is investing in people in our healthcare system. It's great to announce new hospitals and such, but if you don't have enough staff to operate them, and you don't have enough staff to keep what you currently have open, then that doesn't help anybody. So that's disappointing. You know, we have a shortage of health professionals, and I really didn't see anything there yet that tells us that they have a strategic plan on how to recruit more of those. We've heard more announcements of teams being put out, but we also know that the current teams they have aren't even fully staffed. So that's part of the issue. I've been told that 17 students at Monument School, for example, in family residency program, couldn't get placements this year. And that's a problem, you know.
You mentioned the no new taxes or tax increases, no new fees, but you would have liked to seen some more, tax relief there. And you mentioned the sugar tax. Were you surprised not to see anything in terms of an offset to the proposed increase in the carbon tax?
Well, again, you know, that's exactly right. What they've simply done is saying they're maintaining the tax breaks that they have had in place before. But we all recognize that people of our province are hurting. The cost of living is not going down. And as a result of that, you know, the fact that government has chosen to say, oh, we're not going to implement any new fees or we're not going to implement any no increases, how does that help people who are already struggling?
And that's a little bit from opposition leader Tony Wakeham. Well, switching gears here now, big time. Get ready for a blast at Kitty Vitty Lake this June, because Iceberg Alley's lineup, it truly has something for every single music fan. Sean Basha is the man with the plan at the Iceberg Alley Performance Tent. He joined us in studio to break down the lineup.
We have local, national, international artists that come right here to play under a circus tent. And if you've never been there, it's an experience in itself. And
it's world class.
It is.
Truly is.
Oh, my God. Yeah. And the bands who play there love it. And
the people that go there love it.
And I just want to let everybody know that this year we got something that we've never had before. So we're doing an early bird ticket. It's a ticket that consists of you being able to go every single night. You can share it with your folks can go one night. And then you could take that from them, and you can go their next nine nights.
Is it like a lanyard that you wear? Like it's a family pass?
No, it's a ticket, but you can put it in a lanyard if you wanted to. But then you can pass it around. It's only $399. It gets you into every single night. So that's 10 nights for $399. There's only 400 of them, and they stop on April 5th. Wow. So we go on sale at noon today. So like I said, make your kids pay for it. Or make your parents pay for it and then steal it from them. Okay?
I like that. Great idea.
Oh, my God. It's going to be excellent. Okay. Opening night, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, the cat is out of the bag. People know. But if you haven't heard yet, for some reason, we start off on Wednesday the 19th with Violet, Tokyo Police Club, and Beer Naked Ladies. Ladies and gentlemen, what a night of entertainment. These guys are super fun. This is only opening night.
Yep.
We got nine more to go.
Right, that's night one.
Night two, which is Thursday, we got Willie Nile from New York, the Sky Diggers, and Blue Rodeo. Blue Rodeo are finally playing the tent.
Yeah, now, they've never been to the tent.
No, and I know you've seen them at Mall Warner, Mary Brown Center, and you've seen them, but I'm telling you right now, you haven't seen them until you've seen them in the tent, because it's a different experience. Mm-hmm. It'll be energetic and crazy because the people are so close, everybody's standing, having a few drinks. It's going to be amazing.
And there's no mud under your feet. You know, a lot of times you see the rodeo outside and there might be some grassy muck or whatever.
You're in there. I got new air conditioning this year when it's hot. Dancing shoes. Heaters when it's
really cold.
Yes.
New air conditioning.
Yes, I had to get more air conditioning because for some reason in this province now, in June, it gets really hot. All right. Okay. Where were you?
Night three.
Oh, we're on night three. Okay, it's Friday night. Night three, ladies and gentlemen. The 21st, we have Wydemouth Mason, the Sheepdogs, and the Sam Roberts Band. Ooh. All on the same night. Okay? All right?
Amazing.
That's Friday
Canadian
night.
Canadian talent.
Now, Saturday night. Mm-hmm. It's our Newfoundland night. It is always been our most popular night.
Wow.
It sells out every year. And the best local traditional artists play at this event every year. Of course, Shanny Gannock will be headlining tonight. Okay? We also have Rum Ragged and Stoggartite back together again. Jackie Sullivan and Carla Pilgrim. But guess what? After 5 years of not playing a song together because they retired, we managed to get them out of the house and play the tent. It's Buddy Wasp's name and the other fellas. So they're getting back together again to play. And they're playing at 6 o'clock in the day, by the way, because they want to be on early. They want everybody to be in there early, 6 o'clock in the day, Buddy Wasp's name and the other fellas. And Shanny Gannock and all these other great bands. It's going to be an amazing night. That's Saturday, okay? Sunday night, we normally take off, but we're not taking off this year because we have Mick Davis and Thin Love, Big Sugar, and Bush. That was a song you heard when we
Glycerin,
came into this.
They're
from the
they're
UK.
They're huge.
Oh, my God. And Big Sugar, man, I'm telling you. And that's Sunday.
There they are.
See?
So much emotion.
Now, the next night is Monday, and we're going to take it off. We're taking Monday off. Everybody got to have a breather, okay? You got to go to work.
It's true.
Right? You got to feed the kids.
These are the realities.
Right? Yeah. Or your kids got to come see you.
Monday night off.
You're going to be in the tent every night, so Monday is your day to get stuff done. You got to go to Costco?
Downtime.
Monday's the day.
Downtime, okay.
Tuesday night, ladies and gentlemen, we're doing our 1999 night again. This 1999 night is a local night of local artists. The ticket is only $19.99. So you can come in, experience the tent. It's like an industry night. The best local entertainment. We have Baraka. We have Fair Gael putting out a new album, by the way. And after 20 years, we got Caleb Mahoney out of his house. And we put Gearbox back on the stage.
Yes.
And the boys are all coming back together to sing their tune. They might even get Fergus up to do War Like Lads in Russia.
Yeah, see, that's my crowd. That's my crowd. Right. Gearbox is my crowd, okay?
Okay, so that's Tuesday. Now, awesome. What about Wednesday night?
What about Wednesday?
What about Wednesday? This is the second Wednesday. The first Wednesday, Beer Naked Ladies. This Wednesday, we have TikTok sensation Miko and Mariana's Trench. That's going to be wicked.
Mm-hmm.
Wicked Wednesday.
Yes.
Thursday the 27th, ladies and gentlemen. Again, we try to make sure that everybody has their... Oh, that's not that night. That's Friday night.
Too early.
It's too early.
All right,
but that's
hang
okay.
On, hang
no,
on,
but
I'll
I like
back.
That music, so play it.
So do I.
We have LaFoya, Kayflay, and Grandson on Thursday night. Kayflay is the girl that sings Thunder. Thunder. But anyway, she got tons of hits. And Grandson, two wicked bands. It's going to be all wicked. Now we got Friday night at Ship's End, Pup and Billy Talent.
Pup, you're kidding.
Pup are playing.
Wow,
and
they
Billy
are
Talent.
Heavy and hard.
This is Friday night, man.
Excellent.
Take your shared ticket for $399 and get down and see Billy Talent, all right?
And Pup.
Steal it from your parents. All right.
I'll see you there.
They can go other nights.
Right.
Or just take
well,
it from
maybe.
Them.
Maybe.
They won't
we'll
remember
see.
Anyway.
Get a couple.
All right, last night, ladies and gentlemen, Saturday the 29th. So we always do tribute acts and on the Saturday. Last year we started. We can't. It's not just regular tribute acts. We gotta go to the next level, right? So there's a gentleman by the name of Mark Martel. So he was on American Idol, and he actually sang with Queen. He's actually the voice who sings the songs in the movie. And he does One Vision of Queen. And if you go on our website and click on the link, you'll see these guys playing in Germany. You know, to 30,000 people or more.
They play Vegas a lot too, yeah, I think.
Listen, it is an incredible Queen show. One Vision of Queen with Mark Martel. And another tribute act we have for that night is Louisa Marshall as Tina Turner. Now, this lady was on Oprah Winfrey twice. She played on Oprah Winfrey as Tina Turner while Tina Turner was sitting with Oprah watching her play.
Goosebumps.
So she was also on Ellen, and she was voted Best Tribute Act of the Year in the U.S. So these are two huge tribute acts that are going to not let you down. This is going to be... Last year, we had the Bjorn again Bee Gees tribute and the ABBA tribute.
And ABBA, yeah.
And everybody was dancing up a storm. It was a great night. We're going to do that again this year.
I was one of those people.
Yep. Yes, yep. Me too.
The ABBA were
It was
amazing.
Incredible.
They were,
it was incredible.
So were the Bee Gees.
Yeah, the whole thing.
They weren't the real
And they
Bee Gees.
Forced me to play that night as well. So,
yes.
So Billy
and
the
Bruisers
are playing. Are you playing? Yes, we're playing
Excellent.
That night too.
So on the tribute night.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Why not? I'm going to do a
great
tribute.
Show.
I'm going to do a tribute to you.
All right.
All right.
How does that go?
It goes. I'm going to just start talking about snow in Labrador and garbage trucks banging into cars,
oh,
stuff like that. Okay, so don't forget, early bird ticket, $3.99, gets you into every night. It's shareable. Make your parents buy it, steal it from them. Or make your kids buy it, steal it from them. Okay? You can share it around. Everybody can see a night. It's only $400 available. You can't buy them after April 5th. And tickets go on sale today at noon, icebergalleyconcerts.com.
There's nowhere else in the world you can take in 10 nights of music for that price for all those bands. It's
Never.
Just it's unheard of.
That ticket is normally $6.99.
Yeah.
So it's $3.99 for 10 nights and you can share it around.
Wow.
So it is a great value, and this is going to be our best year ever.
And that is Sean Basho with Iceberg Alley Performance Tent. Ben, there really is something there for everyone.
Holy cow. I
Amazing.
Couldn't believe it.
And I love the pass.
Yes, that's brilliant.
It's tempting. It's
a 1999 night in there as well, but just so many good bands each and every night. I know I'm very, very excited.
You're going to go see Billy Talent again.
I'm going to go
Iceberg
see Billy
Alley
Talent. I'm going to go see Bush. I can promise you that. I'm going to see the Sheepdogs and Sam Roberts.
Yeah, they're good
you
too.
That as well, Bare Naked Ladies, the Queen cover band,
Gearbox.
I mean,
Gearbox from the 90s.
There's so many good ones. I'm absolutely pumped. One of those passes, I think. Are in my future, so I just don't see why not.
Hey, can I borrow?
Yeah, you can have it for a night. You can
I'll have it for trad
one night.
Trad night.
You can go see Gearbox on me.
Excellent.
There you go. Well, our time is just about up here on the best of your VOCM mornings. Thank you for tuning into the show, starting your Sunday morning with us. I'm Ben Murphy,
and I'm Jerry Lynn Mackey.
Have a safe, happy Sunday. I'm easy like Sunday morning.